Today's episode is brought to you by the Clackamas County Fair and Rodeo, everything a county fair was meant to be. Coming to you August 16th through 20th, only in Canby. Tickets and information at clackamascountyfair.com or download the new app on Google Play or the Apple App Store. This episode is also brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. Sunday services on campus and online at 9 and 11 a.m. Learn more at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Welcome to the Now Hear This Canby podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Tyler Clausen, and this is what's happening this week in our community. 1 week after the stunning arrest of the state representative James Heave of Canby at the Clackamas County Fair on suspicion of disorderly conduct and interfering with a peace officer, the details of the incident remain unclear. In a probable cause statement released to media this week, a Clackamas County deputy wrote that the Republican official repeatedly refused to present identification and was disturbing passing citizens with his belligerent behavior after the Canby Rodeo concluded last Wednesday. But he told a different story in a nearly 53-minute long livestream Instagram interview Tuesday evening with Free Oregon's Gabe Bueller and Ben Edel, who is also a state senate candidate in Tualatin. Although Heeb admitted to rude behavior while smoking a cigarette in a non-smoking area, he maintained he did not break the law and did not deserve to be arrested. He also said he offered to show identification to the deputies whom he claimed to have met at the fair earlier that day, but they declined. They asked, "Do you have your ID?" And I said, "Yeah, it's here in my pocket. Do you want me to grab it?" He recounted in the interview, and they said, "No." I was like, "Are you sure?" And they were like, "Yeah, just keep your hands out of your pockets." While he repeatedly sought to take responsibility for his actions, he did allow that he felt the deputies took it too far. "I think they could have written me my exclusion and let me go," he said. "That's all it should have ever been, and they would have been totally in their rights to do that because that lady worked for the fair." He became emotional later in the interview as he discussed several tragedies his family has experienced, including the loss of his father and two brothers to suicide and drug abuse. "I'm not a perfect man, but I care deeply about other Oregonians and will serve in the best of my capability for as long as my neighbors and friends and my team will have me," he said. "I will do my best to never let anyone down like this again. I could have dealt with it better. I really could have. And that's what I'm called to do. I'm called to hold myself to a higher standard, and I didn't live up to my own expectations of myself, and for that, I'm sorry. I won't do it again." The full police report of last week's incident remains with the Clackamas County District Attorney's Office, which had not filed charges against Heave as of Wednesday. Canby Mayor Brian Hodson joined four Oregon Republican congressional candidates and other local leaders in a meeting with U.S. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy this week. The California Republican made a rare stop in the Portland metro area in support of incumbent Cliff Bentz, the only current GOP member of Oregon's congressional delegation, and three other hopefuls, Mike Erickson, Lori Chavez de Ramer, and Alex Scarlatos. Of the three, pollsters give Chavez de Ramer the best chances for stealing a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives for the GOP come November. The former mayor of Happy Valley is the Republican nominee for Oregon's widely redrawn 5th district, which is the most evenly matched of Oregon's 6 seats in the chamber. And her opponent, progressive Deschutes County attorney Jamie McLeod Skinner, may have a harder time wooing moderates and independents than Kurt Schrader, the centrist Dem she ousted in the May primary. Erickson and Scarlatos also have more reason for hope than Oregon Republicans typically have in recent election cycles, as both face non-incumbents. Erickson, a Lake Oswego businessman, is challenging State Representative Andrea Salinas in Oregon's newly created 6th district, which was gifted to the state following the most recent census. Meanwhile, Scarlatos, the former Oregon National Guardsman who helped thwart an armed terrorist attack aboard a Paris train in 2015 and later played himself in the Clint Eastwood-directed movie adaptation, faces Labor Commissioner Val Hoyle for the 4th District seat soon to be vacated by retiring Congressman Peter DeFrazio. But MacArthur's Wednesday visit is ostensibly focused on crime in the Rose City and the negative impact liberal policies have caused across communities beyond the city of Portland. Hodson said he planned to discuss what has worked in Cambie and does not see public safety as a political issue. "I do see it as bigger than right versus left, Democrats versus Republicans," he said. Across the board, having a safe place to live, work, and play is crucial to all involved. "I see this as an opportunity to share what we have done to keep Cambie one of the top 10 safest cities in Oregon. I also see this as an opportunity to elevate increasing concerns to a federal level." Leaders from other cities also attended Wednesday's roundtable at the Grand Hotel in Bridgeport Village in Tigard, including Aurora Mayor Brian Asher, Molalla Mayor Scott Kaiser, and Oregon City Commissioner Adam Marl, as well as officials from Sandy, Troutdale, Fairview, Gresham, and Sublimity. She's done it again, for the third or fourth time. Denise McGriff, who was the first person of color appointed and later elected to serve on the Oregon City Commission, on Tuesday became the city's first black mayor after easily outpacing her 3 opponents in the August 23rd special election. McGriff overwhelmingly won the 4-way race to replace former mayor Rachel Lyle Smith, who stepped down in April, collecting more than 80% of the 4,400 votes cast, according to early and unofficial results Tuesday night. Dan Berg was a distant second with less than 10% of the vote, while Leslie Wright Jr., who had previously been declared ineligible due to residency issues, but still appeared on the ballot, and Alan Bedreau split the remaining 10%. McGriff, who has also served as interim mayor of Oregon City since Lyle Smith's resignation, celebrated the historic victory with supporters at Oregon City's Brewing Company Tuesday night, saying she was elated and humbled by the results. "History does indeed have its eyes on us," McGriff said. "I thank all of you and know I will do my best to continue to support our city." The overwhelming victory came despite an error by Clackamas County Clerk Sherry Hall, whose office sent incorrect voter pamphlets to approximately 3,800 Oregon City households. only McGriff was negatively impacted by the error, as her campaign had been the only one of the four submitted to a statement for the pamphlet. Her campaign had touted some of the city's recent successes, including new parks and securing $2 million in federal funds for a railroad quiet zone, which is expected to spur residential development downtown. McGriff's fellow commissioners had also endorsed her for the position. A retired city planning official in Oregon City, Tillamook, and other communities, McGriff has previously served on the Oregon City Planning Commission and McLaughlin Neighborhood Association. McGriff will serve the remaining few months of the term originally won by Dan Holliday in 2018 before he became the first mayor in Oregon City history to be successfully recalled 2 years later. McGriff said she plans to run again this November to seek a full four-year term as mayor. In the midst of tragedy, lifelines sometimes come in unexpected ways. One of those arrived for the grieving Hodak family at the Clackamas County Junior Livestock Auction Saturday, when a lamb owned by first-year 4-H member Kaylin Hodak, 11, sold for more than 10 times its normal asking price thanks to the overwhelming support from local businesses and individuals. 2 days earlier, Kaylin had unexpectedly lost her father, 41-year-old Ryan Hodak, from complications of acute myeloid leukemia, a diagnosis he had only just recently received. Ryan had immediately begun an aggressive course of radiation and chemotherapy, but the treatment wiped out his immune system and left him susceptible to other infections. Sadly, he contracted a bacterial infection in his weakened state and died Thursday, August 18th, only 12 days after his initial AML diagnosis. The speed of his decline stunned and devastated his family and many friends. "It was a huge shock to all of us," his cousin Chris Baker told Now Hear This Camby. "He was young, running his own business, just a hardworking, healthy guy. They were expecting to spend 4 to 6 weeks fighting this with chemo, followed by a long recovery." Baker, a longtime LeGrand resident and veteran of the Union County Junior Livestock Auction with his own kids, said Ryan and his family had long dreamed of owning a farm and raising animals and had recently moved to Beaver Creek to make their dreams come true. Baker was in the stands at the Clackamas County Junior Livestock Auction Saturday when a friend presented Kaylin's lamb at the end of the day. The auctioneer briefly shared about the family's recent tragic loss, and the bidding war was on. The 138-pound lamb, which ordinarily would have sold for $10 to $12 per pound range, was ultimately won by Les Schwab Tire Center at $40 a pound. Add-on bits by Coastal Farm Stores, S&W Underground, Magic Mountain Livestock, and others put the total selling price at over $100 a pound. That's just under $14,000. Kaylin Hodak's little lamb was one of the most valuable animals ever sold at the Clackamas County JLA. "There has been a lot of tears, obviously," Baker said. "But for something like this to come out of the hard situation was really, really cool to see. For Kaylin, it gave her something to smile about that day." Baker said the Hodak family continues to be embraced by loved ones and is doing about as well as can be expected. "They're really feeling the family and community support, and I know that it's been good for them," he said. A GoFundMe campaign has been set up in support of the family. For a link, find this story on our website at cambyfirst.com.
Hey Tyler, read any good books lately?
Yeah, actually, I'm reading a really good one right now.
Awesome. What's it about?
It's kind of complicated, but there's like these two kids with an absent parent, and then this mysterious stranger shows up with his sinister accomplices, and they just start wreaking havoc in their lives. I think it's like a Faustian metaphor.
Wow, that sounds really dense.
It is.
Interesting, though. Who wrote it?
You know, I think it's like a doctor, starts with like an S or something. Sass, Sos.
Tyler, are you reading The Cat in the Hat?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to. It's taken me like 2 months to get this far.
Okay. Well, hey, whatever your interest or reading level, open the world of all things books at the Book Nook in downtown Canby.
Yeah, guys, this local independently owned and operated store is your one-stop shop for the latest releases and great deals on a huge variety of previously owned books, as well as games, art, and writing supplies and gifts.
They also do book clubs and game nights if you're looking for some fun, healthy activities right here in Canby. And hey, you know, for you, Tyler, they have a really expansive selection of children's books.
Oh, cool. Anyway, check them out on Facebook and Instagram, online at booknookcanby.com, or stop by 294 Northwest 2nd Avenue and let their friendly staff introduce you to your new favorite read. Hey, Frankie, why do you think I'd be interested in children's books?
We'll talk about it later.
Oh, okay.
I'm Roz Mason. I'm running for Oregon Senate District 26. This is a rural district, and while our area has historically been seen as a Republican stronghold, this is simply no longer the case. A near-even number of registered voters from both parties now live in our area, and the voice of independent and non-affiliated voters is critically important. I'm the candidate with the best track record of bridge building and working across the political spectrum. I'm committed to representing all people in my district. I show that through my involvement in public safety, the military, business, and agriculture. We all want responsible legislation and civility. In this race, your vote and involvement really matter. Join us at masonfororegon.com. Paid for by Mason for Oregon 21968.
All right, joining us in the Canby Conversation today, we're so delighted to be welcoming back Coach Jimmy Joyce. He's the head coach of the Canby High School football team. Hey, Coach Joyce.
How's it going?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, happy to be here.
Staying cool.
Yeah. Coming down after a little hot practice, but yeah. Happy to be here.
You were so gracious to invite us out for an interview today after what's the first official day of practice.
Yeah.
We've done some stuff all summer, had some stuff last week, which we'll probably talk about. But
yeah, we basically, today is the first day of the OSA calendar. So today is the first day of official practices where we can start counting towards getting kids eligible to games, because we have to have 9 padded practices before games.
Gotcha.
This is the first time we get a pad up today, too. We got to put helmets on,
yeah,
which we haven't had on since June. So
yeah,
that's been really nice. And, you know, after a busy summer of a lot of weights, a lot of work, a lot of hard work,
yeah,
last week we obviously had camp in the evenings, and now to get out here and start, you know, kind of, you know, seeing it start coming together is something pretty special and kind of nice to see.
Yeah, yeah. Last season, obviously, had a great season back in the playoffs. First playoff victory in a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
Hosted a home playoff game for the first time in a number of years. You know, had a, like I said, a great team, great season. Graduated a number of key mm-hmm. seniors, including our starting quarterback mm-hmm. for the past few seasons. So coming into this year, probably looking to kind of do some rebuilding, right?
Or yeah, I don't really like to call it a rebuilding
sure.
process, because we had a lot of guys get a lot of experience last year.
Yeah.
We obviously lose a very, very stout senior class.
Yeah.
You know, between a 3-year
start.
For
multiple sports, right?
Multiple sports, yeah. You know, we look at it as you lose arguably the best offensive lineman in the state of Oregon,
yep.
who's now at Oregon State, and Jacob Strand.
Yeah.
You lose a 3-year starter at quarterback in Mikey Gibson. You lose the defensive player of the year in our league, Joe Brockmiller.
Yeah.
And then a number of guys, the Langsdale Twins and all these others, that really played a major part in us last year. You know, when you have a
on and off the field, right?
Yeah,
bringing that culture into the locker room.
Yeah. I mean, leadership more than anything.
Yeah.
I mean, guys that really just kind of bought into what we were trying to teach and preach.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you have a you know, you're getting a senior class in the 18s and 19s, you know, that's a pretty special, it's a special group. So it's obviously hard to replace them, but it's not really replacing them. You know, we're trying to, you know, we just kind of, the beautiful thing about high school football is it's just, it's always changing.
Right.
Everything's changing year to year.
Right.
So we have guys that are ready and willing to step into those roles. And, you know, we're going to be a lot younger than we were last year. Obviously, we were very senior heavy last year.
Yeah.
But this year, we're going to be a lot younger. But I think the talent's there. And so we'll see what the results look like here in about a month.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned a lot of work this summer. What's the summer look like for you and the football team?
You know, we – it's so funny. As teachers, you know, everyone looks forward.
It's hot.
Yeah, it's hot, yeah. it was very odd because our June was very cold,
yes,
and then our July finally started warming up.
Yeah.
You know, as coaches who are teachers and then kids, you know, for football coaches especially, I think the summer everyone's looking forward to that summer break.
Yeah.
It kind of ramps up for coaches that we're here.
What break?
Where is really no break. We're here. We were here 4 days a week lifting and running.
Yeah.
We also had 2 days a week in the evenings working with other schools and passing and all that kind of stuff. So the summer is a very busy time for football players, and it's for all athletes. I know soccer does a lot of stuff. Cross country does stuff. Volleyball does stuff. But we always say is that really, you know, the season, the first month of the season is dictated really by what happens in June and July.
Yeah.
Because that's, if you can enter fall camp with an idea of who you have, and then those guys have an idea of what you're trying to do, you're a little bit ahead of the schedule.
Yeah.
And I think we had really good turnouts this year. We were over 60 kids a day for weights, which is unheard of in some places.
Yeah.
You know, our numbers are really up now here from where I started 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of guys that are buying in. You know, we have another big freshman class.
60 for weights. That's
60
for
weights.
Close to twice is what we would normally see.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's about on par with the guys last year.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So, but when I first got here, you know, we had I just checked registration numbers last night. I think we had 72 total registered. We probably played that season with about 62.
Yeah.
Last year we had 88 registered, and I think we played the season with about 71.
Yeah.
We have over 100 kids registered this year. We have over about 98 out for camp right now.
Yeah.
So numbers are really up. We have a big freshman class again.
Yeah.
What's really cool, and it's just going to get bigger and bigger because our youth program has grown to leaps and bounds in the last 2 years. We've gone from having about 100 kids to almost 300 kids in the youth program. In a matter of about a year and a half.
Yeah.
So it's just growing immensely. Kids are wanting to be involved in football, and that's great to see around here.
Yeah, yeah. One thing that I love about what you and your coaches do, Coach Joyce, is really it's not just about winning football games. It's not just about teaching the kids to be a good football team. That's obviously a big part of it. But you bring in a lot of speakers. You help inspire them. You really try to teach them how to be you know, good young men and you know, those leadership qualities and things. Tell me why you do that.
Because in a way, sports mimics real life.
Yeah.
It really does. And that's something that I think a lot of kids don't get to experience on a day-to-day basis, where it's, you know, you're teaching them to be better people.
Yeah.
Not everyone's going to go off to be able to play college football.
Right.
I think that's the perception for a lot of people, is that coaching in any sport is about trying to get you guys off to the next level and everything like that.
Yeah.
It is, in a way. Obviously, we want you to go off, and we want you to, you know, be inspired to go do something great athletically. But you also want to you want to teach these kids values and problem-solving techniques that are going to carry them on to the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
You know, I always say it is that the hallmark of a great class or a great team isn't, you know, a championship. It isn't a victory. It's about 5 years later, how many guys come back to games on Friday night? Mm-hmm. How many people, you know, still are proud of their high school 5 or 6 or 7 years later?
Yeah.
That it means something to them. For me personally, the values that I learned on the football field, the basketball court, the baseball diamond, have helped me become a better father. It's helped me become a better husband. Not necessarily became a better football player or a coach. It's just stuff that was other stuff. That's you know, that you just experienced, but it's the messages and the lessons that I learned growing up from the coaches that I looked up to.
Yeah.
That really, you know, inspired me to this very day. And our goal is to really do that. We always talk about RISE, you know, respect, inspire, strength, and effort. And that's how we try to live our lives. You know, we don't play football on a Friday night just for a community or a school. We play for everyone that's come before us and everyone that's going to come after us. And everyone in those stands, we're trying to inspire them to just do, you know, be a little bit better each and every day. And if we can do that, we're going to be successful. And, you know, I think in the 4 years now I've been here, you've seen those kids that really take that to heart.
Yeah.
And want to be a part of something that even if, you know, one of the hardest things I think for a kid is to say, like, I want to go play football. I've never done it before. I don't know anything, but I want to be a part of that.
Yeah.
And that's a cool thing, is when you have a kid that comes out, unsure of themselves, and maybe not be a first or second string guy, but still wants to be a part of it. That means culture's right. And, you know, we always talked about, too, when I got here, one thing I preached to the coaches every day was, you know, you don't get the culture you want, you get the culture you create. Mm. And too many people go to seminars, they go to a, you know, they read something on YouTube or TikTok or anything like that, and they get an idea,
yeah,
and they go, okay, I'm going to say this today and it's going to happen.
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
I mean, I see that in education, I see that in coaching. A lot of people,
habits,
you know, look for that quick fix.
Yeah.
They look for that quick fix. But it's really about, you know, tearing stuff down. And that's what we did. We tore stuff down and we've tried to build it back up. We kept what we liked and we got rid of what we didn't like. And it's hard because it's challenging. But at the same time, I think we're seeing the fruits of our labor right now. And not just in football. I think that's going on in multiple sports around the school.
Yeah, yeah. You're already kind of answering my next question a little bit, so stop doing that.
No, yeah, sorry.
No, not at all. You know, talking about, you know, tearing it down, building back up, how would you describe the identity of Canby football? And is it different sort of year to year and team to team, or is there something more underlying than that?
I think, you know, it's different.
Yeah.
Because I you know, I obviously can think of Canby football back in the, you know, the 90s and the 2000s.
It had
an identity. It had an identity, and it was circled and it was centered around the wing tee.
Yeah.
You know, obviously we are a little bit more existential in how we do stuff offensively now.
Yeah.
We try to fit our personnel to do what's best. I mean, last year we really thought we could be a pretty balanced attack.
Yeah.
It took us two games to realize that we needed to lean heavily on our run game.
Yeah.
Didn't mean we abandoned the pass game, but we had to morph it into what we did, because the whole idea is trying to create a positive experience for the kids.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a square peg in the round hole guy. I was at a coaching seminar 10 years ago, and it was a guy talking about the air raid offense, what's, you know, taking over the NFL, it's taking everywhere. And I asked the question, you know, what if you don't have a good quarterback? Because air raid, you throw the ball every time. He goes, oh, you're not going to be very good at it. Well, then don't run the air raid. That
right.
was always my
right,
that would
right.
that would have been my answer. So the identity is a little bit different, but I think the thing that I am really happy to see kind of take over is the hard work aspect of the program.
Yeah.
And the, I don't want to call it like the cohesiveness of the program. The way these players care for one another and look after one another is something pretty special. And I do think that is something that it's not an offense, it's not a defense, it's the cohesiveness of the program. And it's going down all the way into the youth now. I'm seeing that where we have 7th and 8th graders working together. We have coaches working together. It's not really an us versus them mentality. It's not a, you know, I'm doing it my way. It's we're going to do what's best for this program.
Yeah.
And we're going to make the best of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's the individualness is leaving.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to talk about this upcoming year and some of the key players. But first, my last question, one that often comes up. But just Canby is, in your experience and in mine as well, just a uniquely football town and a uniquely supportive of its athletics in general. But Canby loves football.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely. I mean, I always talk.
A lot of it is like kind of that legacy.
It
lot
is.
Of the folks, you know, were on those teams.
It's culture.
Wing tee teams.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
but,
culture.
Yeah.
It really is. The thing about it is that, you know, my 95% of my coaching experience in life was in the Portland metro area, in the Beaverton area, where.
Yeah.
We obviously had success, you know. I've won state titles. I've won league titles. I've coached, you know, very high-level teams and stuff like that. But you didn't really get a sense of community support like that. I remember because, I mean, there's just different things. We are a one-horse town.
Yeah.
We are,
that's part of it.
Yeah, we
are like high school football in Beaverton. Which high school? Like,
yeah, you have six.
Yeah.
Whereas here, I mean, we are here. I mean, that's, we are, you know, you walk downtown, it's Canby.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, you don't have, you know, four different community. You don't have four different, at Fred Meyer's, you don't have four different kids going into a room that might go to four different high schools.
Right, right.
So that, I think, is unique about Canby, that we are a large single school district. And I think the other thing that's just kind of really cool is the support for the kids that the community gives them is something that is unmatched, I think, in outside of maybe, you know, smaller towns in Eastern Oregon and stuff like that, where there's more of an isolation. And I think just people are really proud of their community.
Yeah.
And that is something that I as a football coach, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Because you want a place where you feel the pressure to do well, you feel the pressure to achieve higher. And that was the one thing that when I got here, a lot of times when a coach goes to a new school, they can kind of sneak in incognito and just kind of do their stuff.
Yeah.
I could tell you within the first hour of my announcement, or like people reaching out to me wanting to be a part of it, because they want to be better.
Yeah.
They want to be better, and that is something that is so cool. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's October, first round of the playoffs, or middle of March. I go into Cutsforth, someone will come up to me and talk to me about football.
Yeah.
And it's just something that's very special, and I think it's just – and it's not just a football thing, even though I know, you know, a lot of people identify football because we are a football town in many ways, but the support our other athletics gets is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Is that something that you feel like you and your coaches have to work to cultivate a little bit, or is it more just there?
I think the biggest thing is embracing it.
Yeah, yeah.
Is embracing it. Yeah. I think that is one of the toughest things for coaches sometimes to do, is because I think coaches love to put up walls.
Yeah, yeah.
They really do. I think because there's, you know, we do what we do here, but it's
it
also
put pressure.
And to put, yeah, because it puts, but embrace it.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, like, relish in the fact that people want to be supportive of you.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is something that is so unique. And so don't put those barriers up. If you, you know, if someone wants to be a part of something, allow them to be a part of it, because what you are doing on the field is reflecting upon them.
Yeah.
And that in a positive way. So I think that's one of the things that's hard sometimes for coaches, because, you know, when things are going bad, you do want to put up those fences and be like, stay away at arm's length. And obviously there's sometimes you have to do that occasionally.
Yeah.
But for the most part is, you know, we're a community that values our athletics and wants to be a part of it. Embrace it.
Yeah.
Embrace it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Clackamas County Fair is everything a county fair was meant to be. Join in the fun August 16th through the 20th only at the historic Clackamas County Fairgrounds and Event Center in Canby, Oregon. There's something for the whole family to enjoy, from food and entertainment to livestock and agriculture to rides on the Midway. Visit Days Gone By at the Pioneer Village, featuring a reenactment of Oregon Pioneer Days, and view creative exhibits from local artisans. Stay for the world-class Canby Rodeo, and don't miss the rodeo after-party with the Boondock Boys Friday night and Nate Botsford Saturday. For details and to buy your tickets in advance, visit ClackamasCountyFair.com or download the new app on Google Play or the Apple App Store. The Clackamas County Fair, everything a county fair was meant to be.
Hey, Tyler! We have a furry new friend I wanted to show you. His name is Frankie with an I-E. Isn't that cute?
Oh, I get it, because you're Frankie with a C-K-E.
Yeah.
That's so clever.
I know.
The only cute thing I see on this video is me, because you're blurry and frozen.
What? No way. I just got a new phone, and it's supposed to have a great camera.
Dude, you can have the best camera in the world, but you still freeze up if your video calls don't have quality internet.
So what should I do? Frankie's playing in the pool, and it's absolutely adorable.
I'm guessing you're using your mobile data for this FaceTime call, right? Just connect to your home Wi-Fi instead. I bet your video comes through just fine. You did just upgrade to Direct Link with Wi-Fi and fast upload speed, so you might as well get the best use out of them.
Oh, yeah, I did. Okay, hang on. There. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I should be on my Wi-Fi now.
Yep.
Can you see Frankie in the pool?
Oh, he looks like he's having a blast. See what fast upload speeds can do? For upload and downloads at the speed of aww, visit www.directlink.coop/internet or give him a call at 503-266-8111.
So coming into a school year and an athletic year where most sports and activities in Canby are kind of grappling and pivoting to 5A, Canby football is already like, welcome to the jungle. Yeah, so we don't have to worry about that as much. But it is kind of interesting because, you know, you see kind of the previews already coming out and folks looking at, you know, kind of picking some of their early favorites for teams and individuals. And a lot of Canby Cougars showing up on a lot of those lists. We're not really a secret anymore. Folks are kind of gaining notice after some of the success we've seen in the past few seasons.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have, like I said, we have a lot of young talent on, on this program. Like I said, we have a very small senior class this year. It's just part of the thing. This is my first freshman class that I got here with. And I think we had 17 of them.
Yeah.
I think and I bet we probably only started the year with about 13.
Yeah.
So we have about 12 ish.
Yeah.
And we've had a few guys join from that group. So it's a small senior class. It's a talent. There's plenty of talent with Braden Snodderly, Davis Hagen, Landon Sprague, and others that have plenty of experience on Friday nights. It's just not really a deep class where you can go down and say, okay, you know, 12 of the 22 positions are going to be filled by seniors. That's not really how it is going to be this year. We're going to be like I said, I don't like rebuild, but we are definitely, I think, it's going to be hard pressed to find a younger team in our area than us.
Okay.
Because I mean, we're going to have a lot of juniors in key starting positions.
Yeah.
Some sophomores getting a lot of reps too.
Yeah.
And you know, that just bodes well for us down the road, but we're not worried about down the road. We're really worried about what's going on right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it fair to guess we're going to be a more run heavy offense this year as well? We've got Tyler Canole coming back.
Obviously you get the leading rusher in the state back off for one of the most spectacular sophomore seasons I've ever seen.
Yeah, he was phenomenal.
It was phenomenal.
Yeah,
and you know, he's obviously, you know, him and Bryce Oliver last year in the backfield were a great 1-2 punch.
Yeah,
and we're building depth at the running back position. We've moved some guys around. We've put them there. We're still looking. You know, to solidify some guys running that 2 and 3 spot for him. But, you know, we're going to be the thing that we've been really happy to see this year is that we didn't really think that we were going to have a lot of wide receiver depth.
Yeah.
That was kind of one of our things. And over the summer, we've created some depth. We've had some guys from the sophomore. The one thing that I've noticed, and this is something that's very unique, that will never happen again because of COVID.
Yeah.
But the freshmen that came in last year, hadn't played football in a year. Even if they had played football, they hadn't played football in a year because of COVID.
Yeah.
It just wasn't a part of it.
Yeah.
They didn't. And it was really tough on them. But what we've seen is the maturity level and just their bodies and then their mentality has grown immensely after 1 year of football.
Yeah.
And so we have some guys that might not have been ready. You know, we didn't think about in the 2 to 3 deep last year coming out of freshman ball.
Yeah.
But now we're looking at it and going, these guys can play.
Yeah.
And because they figured it out a little bit. And I think that's just getting back reacclimated to normalcy.
Yeah.
That's what you can call it.
Yeah.
But so we have a little bit more wide receiver depth. I think we're going to be an offense that's going to be able to expand and contract a little bit more than we did last year, because by the end of the last year, we were pretty much contracted. I mean, we're running a lot of 13 sets, which is one back, three tight ends.
Yeah.
And we can still do that stuff this year, but we'll see how it goes. I mean, like I said, losing Jacob Strand is obviously a really tough blow to anybody, because there's just not too many 6'5", 275-pound kids that can run and block like he can. And that's why he's at Oregon State right now. But we have some young talent. Andy Soles is coming back after a great sophomore year. He's going to take over that tight end spot. And then we've built some depth at tight end too.
Yeah.
And we have some guys that we can throw in there. So we still gain a lot of stuff, but we do want to be a little bit more of a we want to be able to contract into a 13 set and also go to like a 12 set or even a 10 set where we put a lot more wide receivers on the field.
Yeah. What are we looking at for quarterback this year? Obviously, like you said, we're replacing Mikey Gibson, who maybe, on whatever list wasn't the greatest quarterback ever, but he was such a leader.
Such a warrior.
You know, he was always just there.
He's a kid that's given it all. He's a kid that that in many ways got dealt some bad hands.
Yeah.
But never was discouraged by it, whether it was through injury or injuries to his wide receivers and stuff. You know, a lot of people were saying, like, someone asked me a few months ago, they're like, well, you try to take the ball out of Mikey's hand. We didn't take the ball out of Mikey's hand. We had to use Mikey in a different way because we didn't have anyone to give him the ball to.
Yeah.
So it was something like that. This year, obviously, we have two juniors coming back. Parker Ackerman, who played some wide receiver and corner for us last year.
Yeah.
He's coming in. He is a guy that's a dual threat kind of guy.
Yeah.
Another warrior type of guy because he's been dealt some tough blows this offseason and has come out stronger from them. Gage Millar is a guy that last year missed some time as a sophomore, but is a tireless worker off the field, and he definitely has a very lively arm and ability to throw the ball deep, and is also a pretty good little dual threat guy.
Yeah,
Parker
got some snaps at backup last year.
Parker got some snaps a little bit occasionally. I think Gage did too, but not a ton.
Yeah.
But those two guys, I don't really like to say like right now we have a starter or not, because they're getting equal reps and they're going to continue to get equal reps. And I really strongly think that both are going to play.
Yeah.
I know that Parker definitely has ability to play elsewhere on the field too. Gage does as well. And then we have a sophomore, Kellen Oliver, who has just really is probably the biggest surprise for me coming off the offseason because he's the poster boy for that no football as an eighth grader type of thing. Because last year I was like, he has some ability. There's been times where he's looked like, one of our better quarterbacks this summer, where his ability to throw the football and just ability to comprehend stuff, he's a very confident kid. So he's a guy that's going to be – we're going to look forward down the line. And all three are sharing reps right now. And like I said, I think we're going to have to – at some point this year, I think we're going to have to play all three.
Yeah.
Obviously, we have a workhorse in the backfield in Tyler Canold who knows what he's going to have to do this year. But we hope to, with our ability to throw the ball with some – like I said – actual wide receiver depth. That's kind of nice to see. So we'll see how it kind of materializes.
I want to talk just a little bit more about Tyler. Obviously, just coming off two incredible seasons. He, as a freshman in freshman league, I think we talked about this before, but just put up I described it as Madden numbers, like 500-600 yards.
It was ridiculous.
Touchdowns, just insane, ridiculous. Yeah. Probably would have had taken some time at varsity if it had been a normal year.
Exactly.
Last year led the state in rushing, like you said, as a sophomore.
Yeah.
So how do you and the coaching staff, do you game plan things specifically for him? Do you kind of take a little more time and kind of helping him get ready and prepare for the center? How do you approach a kid that special?
So the first thing is, he's a kid that needs no extra motivation to work. He's a hard-working kid. He's just that's who he is.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I saw him, that he really stood out to me was we had just gotten the clearance to do workouts in the I think it was July 6th. Yeah. It was July 6th, 2020.
Yeah.
And I walked out to the freshmen just to make sure everyone was signed in and in the days where we used to have to take their temperatures and all that kind of stuff and not touch a football.
Yeah, that
or
was
anything
the,
like that.
Where
yeah.
we were miming the throwing and the catching. Yeah.
And I watched this kid run through ladders, and I'm like, who's that?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, it's Tyler Knoll. And I'm like, okay. And, you know, it became pretty clear that he's special.
Yeah.
And then we get into that six-game shortened season. And I remember watching him in the first game, and it was Madden-like.
Yeah.
Because he is – I mean, he's just – he's physically mature.
Yeah.
You know, that's the – that's what really separates an athlete is how physically mature are they at the age of 16, 17, or 18.
Yeah.
And he's a very physically mature guy, his great breakaway speed. And I'm just like, okay, if this was a normal season
– yeah.
I remember telling Troy Souls this, our freshman coach, I'm like, if this was a normal season, he'd be gone.
Yeah.
But it didn't make much sense to bring him up. At that point, we had some depth at running back anyway.
Yeah.
And we just wanted him to get the success that he needed.
Yeah.
Going into last year, you know, with Bryce coming back out, who didn't play that COVID season, then him, it really allowed us to experiment a little bit more with him.
It was cool
because
he had two different styles.
Two very different styles. And we're going to have two different styles this year, too.
Yeah.
But with him, you know, it's one of those things. I told him the other day that you are going to be the best running back in the state, and you're going to be the best decoy in the state too, because there isn't going to be too many teams that are going to line up against us and not have some eyes on him.
Yeah.
Everywhere he goes. Gotcha. I mean, if he goes gets a hot dog at halftime, there's probably going to be a few defenders with him.
He's
so
going for the mustard. Going for the mustard.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those things where he – and I think that's the next step in his development is can you replicate what you did last year not as an unknown.
Yeah.
And, you know, we saw at the end of last year what he was still able to – what he was capable of.
Right.
And, you know, we have a tough schedule this year, and we want him to be healthy and keep that going. And I have no doubt in my mind that he's going to be just as explosive and in beneficial to us as he was last year. Because he's not only – the thing that's kind of nice about him, too, is not only is he a guy that can put up the Madden-like numbers, like he's a good leader. And he's a guy that kind of – he's a quiet guy that kind of does things the right way. And so we just want to see where his next steps go.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Last question, Coach. Thanks so much for taking so much time to talk to us today. But, yeah, just talk to us about your preview for the defense a little bit.
You know, defensively, you know, it's the same situation as the offense. We have a lot of guys to fill in. I think we're going to have some guys up front that are going to be very you know, like a guy like Gideon Noss, who got a lot of time last year, but is going to be looking to be kind of a guy this year.
He had some good plays on defense last year.
Yeah, very good. He's a little fire hydrant, he's just got a great motor. The one place where we return some guys that we don't really lose, and we actually have some pretty good depth, that is inside linebacker, where we return Davis Hagan, who was honorable mention all league last year, and Braden Snodderly, who was first team all league, honorable mention all state. Both guys returning, and with Andy Souls right there too. I think it's going to be something that's going to be very beneficial for them to see how that plays out. Defensively too, we also have obviously Tyler Knoll is returns in the secondary.
Yeah.
We're kind of right now playing around where we're going to play him at. He was a corner last year.
Yeah,
kind of see him more as a free safety going forward.
Yeah.
So he's still a guy that's probably going to be asked to come in and probably lock down some wide receivers for us.
Yeah.
But, you know, allowing him to kind of play that center field position, it would be nice. Then we got some depth with Parker Ackerman, who's coming back from corner. We have some guys that were either kind of that second or third level at corner that are going to be asked to come in this year, and they're young. Cohen Hall is a guy that last year I think really started figuring stuff out later in the year.
Yeah.
He's going to be a big part of what we do offensively and defensively at corner. So we look to be as dominant as we were last year, but in maybe a different way. We don't obviously have, you know, 280-pound linemen across the board anymore, but we do have some speed.
Yeah.
And so we just want to look out and try to do our best we can.
Awesome. When does the season start?
Season starts September 2nd in Bend at Mountain View High School.
Yeah.
And then we do have – it is an odd schedule this year because of referee shortages that we kind of got the short straw a few times because each league is basically asked 1 week a year to change a game to either Thursday or Saturday.
Yeah.
So – We have a Thursday night game. Our first home game is a Thursday night game against Oregon City, who comes back into our schedule.
Interesting.
It was kind of nice that, you know, we lost them when we left the Three Rivers League. So we get a Three Rivers League opponent in week two. Week three, we go to my old stomping grounds. We play at Beaverton on a Thursday night. So we get two 6A opponents. Two 6A opponents right there. Then we play here. Bend comes here, who's a 6A team that's dropped down. Both Mountain View and Bend dropped down to 5A. So that's going to be they're returning a lot of players. And then we head out to Southridge, another 6A team that has dropped down to 5A. Before we get into league play, our league schedule this year is a little strange, just in how our league decided to set itself up. The thought was that a full league schedule wasn't going to benefit everyone's preseason schedules, so they divided us into two. So we play Southridge is in our league, but we actually play them as a non-conference game. And then we play Hood River Valley, Centennial, it's another 6A school that's coming down to 5A. And then we also play Putnam. And so those are our three conference games, and then we have a crossover game with the other side of our bracket. So we're obviously hoping to see Wilsonville in week 9 for a championship on the line. That's our goal. I know that's going to be their goal as well. And, you know, it sucks not having them on our schedule, because I think that's something we all look forward to.
Budding rivalry,
yeah. It's something we all look forward here to, but we hope to get there in week 9. So.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks so much, Coach. Best of luck to you to the rest of the summer prep and practice and the upcoming season.
Thank you very much.
Let's hear it. Go Cougars.
Oh, go Cougars.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears? Even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or that baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Camby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Camby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yep. Heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Camby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Camby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Camby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City, or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net.
Now Hear This Camby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Camby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Camby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.